All right, 2 Samuel chapter 3. We covered about half the chapter last week. And we saw this strife between Saul's son Ish-bosheth and Abner sort of come to a head. If you'll recall, Ish-bosheth accused his commander of his army, Abner, of having an affair with one of Saul's concubines. And it angered Abner. We don't know if he had the affair or not. That's sort of not the point in Abner's mind. Abner's like, look, after all I've done for you, and you are going to fault me with a sin concerning a woman? You got to remember, the place of women in this society was just above a slave. And Abner's, whether he did it or not, is just left unclear in the text, but he's saying that's nothing. Whether I did or whether I didn't is irrelevant. I'm the one that brought you to the throne. And you know, from the human perspective, that does seem to be the case. I mean, God used Abner to raise Ish-bosheth to the throne. But because of this, Abner swore that he would help Yahweh, if that's even the right language, bring David to the throne because that's the promise God had given to him. The wrong side of that is we know that Abner knew the whole time that the kingdom was promised to David, and here he'd been fighting for Ish-bosheth. So it puts his own words put him on the wrong side of God. And it does seem to be little more than a political move by Abner. It's just self-interests, but that's not uncommon in politics, really. Abner goes to David and he explains the willingness of the people to bring David to power. You can have the throne over all Israel and I can make that happen. Abner had great influence over people. He was popular, so to speak. They clearly reached some type of covenant. Verse 21 in this chapter, Abner said to David, I will arise and go and will gather all Israel to my lord the king, that they make a covenant with you and that you may reign over all that your heart desires. So David sent Abner away and he went in peace. They had an agreement. Abner said, I can do it. David said, go do it. They agreed. Sadly, in this lesson before us, this whole episode takes an ugly turn, so to speak. David's commander, Joab, is about to go behind his back and commit murder. David sent a man away in peace. Joab's going to kill him. That makes it sort of worse. Not just that it was murder, but also because it's a man that the king had promised security to. Let's get into it. Verse 22. Just then, is it not amazing how many times the Bible is so meticulous to say, at that moment, you know, at exactly the right time. Just then the servants of David arrived with Joab from a raid, bringing much spoil with them. But Abner was not with David at Hebron, for he had sent him away, and he had gone in peace. Look, if the Bible repeats something for us, it's important. When Joab and all the army that was with him came, it was told Joab, Abner the son of Ner came to the king, and he has let him go, and he has gone in peace three times. We get that point. Then Joab went to the king and said, what have you done? Behold, Abner came to you. Why is it that you have sent him away so that he is gone? You know that Abner, the son of Ner, came to deceive you and to know you're going out and you're coming in and to know all that you are doing. So David sends Abner away and he goes away in peace, and seemingly at the perfect time, Joab and the army arrive back from battle. It can't be long because he's going to end up finding Abner about a mile away from Hebron. So this is perfect timing as far as the way that we look at that. It's as though the rear door of David's house shuts behind Abner and the front door opens and Joab walks in. I mean, it's almost that way. It's somewhat unclear, really, who the army's away fighting at this time. Clearly, they're not fighting the Ishbosheth and the northern kingdom. I mean, here's Abner that has already visited David. He's the commander, so they're not fighting him. They're not fighting the Philistines, it doesn't seem. That only really leaves the people and nations around Ziklag, where David stayed there for a while, that they could have been fighting. Whomever it was, that's, I guess, somewhat irrelevant because the author doesn't give us that information. Whomever it was, they were successful and they had spoil, and that spoil is being brought back to David. And then the writer gives us once again the information that Abner is gone. But Abner was not with David at Hebron, for he had sent him away, and he had gone in peace. That's great clarification by the writer. Again, Abner's gone, and again, he's been given security by the king. He's safe. It's peaceful. They've reached a revolution. I mean, a resolution. They have reached a covenant, an agreement. Abner's now on David's side. I mean, the moment Joab gets there, some gossip. You men, your ears should remember what happened back here in our class this morning. Somebody just immediately hits Joab up. You aren't going to believe this. That's what you can just picture going on. Abner visited David, and David sent him away. Not only did he send him away, he sent him away in peace. He gave him security. Well, I mean, it seemingly was told to Joab as he's walking towards David in town, and Joab just hits David right up. He goes and confronts David, and he said, look, Abner is deceiving you, and you know it. It's no better than a political ploy. It's a tactic of war. He wants to see what's going on in your life. He just wants to find out how he can attack you, and you have messed up by sending him away. He says in the 25th verse, you know that Abner, the son of Ner, came to deceive you and to know you're going out and you're coming in and to know all that you are doing. Now the text makes it clear in verse 30 that Joab and his brother Abishai, his brother, killed Abner because he had put their brother Asahel to death in the battle of Gibeon. We know what's going on here in the mind of Joab. This is not a concern of war. This is not a concern of an enemy. He's mad because his brother had been killed by Abner. And if you'll recall in that story, Abner did not want to kill his brother. He did everything in the world to keep from killing. He said, hey, Asahel, is this you? He said, it's me. He said, look, you need to turn aside to one of the young men if you won't spoil. Don't come to me. I don't want to kill you. And Asahel wouldn't let up. And Abner had no choice but to kill him, or his own life was going to be taken. Most commentators that I read after, interestingly, though the text doesn't say so, believe that Joab actually also had some concerns that Abner may take over the army. I mean, Abner was a well-schooled soldier. He was the commander of the northern army, and he was considerably older than Joab was. Tom Wilson says this, being self-serving, he was determined to close every avenue that might have led to Abner's appointment as commander-in-chief of David's forces. Dale Ralph Davis, who is one of the most respectable commentators on this book, said, I think Joab was concerned about Joab as much as he was about Asahel. It is likely, though admittedly the text does not crassly say so, that Joab smelled a rival in Abner and that he feared Abner might replace him as the commander in the army. Is that possible? Sure. But the text doesn't tell us that. We don't know. The text tells us that the main thing that they were angry about was that Asahel had been killed by Abner. It's feasible, but we don't know that. We certainly cannot say so. And in Dale Ralph Davis's defense, he admits that the text doesn't say that. But folks, people are human. They are fallen. And there certainly is a possibility, at least, that Joab is somewhat jealous of Abner and what he might, could have done. It says in verse 26, when Joab came out from David's presence, he sent messengers after Abner, and they brought him back from the cistern of Sarah. But David did not know about it. And when Abner returned to Hebron, Joab took him aside into the midst of the gate to speak with him privately, and there he struck him in the stomach so that he died for the blood of Asahel, his brother. Afterward, when David heard of it, he said, I and my kingdom are forever guiltless before the Lord for the blood of Abner, the son of Ner. May it fall upon the head of Joab and upon all his father's house, and may the house of Joab never be without one who has a discharge or who is leprous, or who holds a spindle, or who falls by the sword, or who lacks bread. So Joab and Abishai, his brother, killed Abner because he had put their brother Asahel to death in the battle at Gibeon. It's somewhat surprising that Abner, being such an experienced soldier anyway, would just willingly turn around and go back with the commander of what seemingly minutes ago was his enemy's commander-in-chief. But he does. He goes back with him. Why do you think that is? Well, I think it's because the king, who was Joab's boss, had promised peace to Abner, and Abner trusted David. And I guess he assumed that since Joab was under David's authority, most likely Joab was doing David's bidding. And as far as we know, there may have been some lies told that got him back there anyway. It says that they found him at the cistern of Sirah. This is barely more than a mile away from Hebron. This is how quickly these events happen. Abner comes to David. They have a discussion about what Abner can do for David and how he can make the kingdom come to him. David gives him peace. Abner leaves. At that moment, Joab is arriving into town, being told of what David and Abner had concocted and how that David had given Abner peace. Joab immediately leaves David's presence, sends people to get Abner, and they find him less than a mile away. This all happened really quickly. It's just perfect timing in as far as the way that we look at things, though we know that God is the God of perfect timing. I mean, He's the God of providence. It could have happened any other way, but we just see the dominoes falling. So Abner returns with these messengers, and it says that Joab took him aside into the midst of the gate to speak with him privately. Now, we know from verse 30 that Abishai was there too. Joab wasn't the only one guilty in the murder of Abner. Abishai is guilty in the murder as well. But Joab is the leader. Joab is the one with the most authority. More is expected from Joab than there is from Abishai. He was right under the king, and there to whom much is given, much is required, and there was much required from Joab. Now, you might think that this is an odd place for him to speak with him privately. This is in the gate. I mean, how much more public of a place can you get in the middle of the gate? I mean, there should be people walking through the gate all the time. Well, the problem is we don't really have a good mental picture of what gates were like back in those days. From what I understand, these gates were a substantial size, and they would have as many as 6 chambers where you could walk into 1, 2, 3, and ultimately be way back away from any public discussion or public hearing. So it would have been a very private affair if he took him into the innermost chamber of the gate. It wouldn't be as public as we often think about. And I have no idea what they talked about. I mean, it says that Joab took him into the midst of the gate to speak with him privately. We don't know if they talked or how much they talked. I'll go on record saying I believe Joab intended to kill him when he took him in there. But it is possible that they discussed some things first and then he decided to kill him. I don't know. We just aren't given that. They could have talked about Abner's accused deception of David. Joab could have said, look, you're just, you know, this is a political ploy by you. You're trying to deceive the king. You're trying to win the war. I don't know. They could have talked about Abner's accused murder of Asahel, though it seems like it was public knowledge that he didn't want to kill him. It could be that they talked and accomplished nothing and then finally they kill him, or it could be that they took him in there and just killed him right on the spot. We don't know. It doesn't really matter. The key is that they murdered Abner. Now, what Abner did to Asahel was done in the middle of war. And he didn't want to do it, for that matter. But nonetheless, it was a public war. And when you kill someone in war, it is different than premeditated murder in private. And that's what they see going on here. And even the law tells us that there is a difference between those things. So David hears of this. I mean, verse 28, afterward when David heard of it, he said, I and my kingdom are forever guiltless before the Lord for the blood of Abner, the son of Ner. Now, if he was to rule over the entire nation, like God had promised, it's important that the whole nation realize that David didn't have anything to do with this murder. I mean, he cannot have a unified kingdom if he's guilty of murder over the commander of the northern army, which, by the way, had 10 tribes compared to 2. No way that he can have a unified kingdom. David says that he is innocent, and he is forever innocent before God because of this. Could be some, you know, political motivation here, but I think this is really more moral than anything with David. And then David declares this curse on Joab. He says in verse 29, may it fall upon the head of Joab and upon all his father's house, and may the house of Joab never be without one who has a discharge or who is leprous, or one who holds a spindle, or who falls by the sword, or who lacks bread. Serious curse. But many wonder why David didn't have him put to death. The law required death for murder. If a man takes another man's life in premeditated murder, he was to be stoned. He was to be put to death. And he had plenty of witnesses to do that. Now, for what it's worth, David will have him put to death after David dies. He will instruct Solomon to put Joab to death. But that's a long way coming. And many wonder why. Nonetheless, here's what Solomon will say when he puts Joab to death. Do as he said, strike him down and bury him, and thus take away from me and my father's house, David, the guilt for the blood that Joab shed without cause. The Lord will bring back his bloody deeds on his own head, because without the knowledge of my father David, he attacked and killed with the sword 2 men more righteous and better than himself, Abner the son of Ner, commander of the army of Israel, and Amasa the king of Jether, commander of the army of Judah. So even Solomon is going to give the Lord credit for bringing the death of Joab because of his murder of Abner. And obviously, this other man, Amasa, the son of Jether. But still yet, Why didn't David have him put to death like the law said? I don't know. I mean, I could throw reasons out. Maybe he didn't want to lose two commanders in one day. That'd be a big loss for any king sitting on the throne to lose two commanders of an army in one day. Certainly that's possible. I guess it should be mentioned that Joab was his nephew. But he does have Solomon kill him. So we wouldn't think that that particular reason is likely. I don't know why David didn't have him put to death. I have no idea. But he did curse him, and this is quite a curse, actually. And ultimately, the curse will be putting him to death through Solomon. But he curses him and says, "May his house never be without one who has a discharge or who is leprous." These people would be unclean in Israel. They would have nothing to do with the worship of God if they had these problems. They could not go into the temple. They could not ever be pronounced clean as long as these things were going on. He says, "One who holds a spindle." My understanding is this was women's work. And what he's saying is that the men of that household would be doing women's work. In fact, Malbum, a 19th century Jewish scholar, said it would have been very demeaning for any man to have done what is being implied here in this text. He would never be without one who falls by the sword or who lacks bread. So this is quite a curse that David pronounces on him. No, he doesn't enforce the law in taking his life. He will do that through Solomon, but he does invoke this curse on him. And as we said earlier, verse 30 clearly tells us that Abishai was part of the plot to have Abner assassinated. Let's finish up the chapter. Verse 31, "Then David said to Joab and to all the people who were with him, 'Tear your clothes, put on sackcloth, and mourn before Abner.' And King David followed the buyer. They buried Abner at Hebron, and the king lifted up his voice and wept at the grave of Abner. And all the people wept. And the king lamented for Abner, saying, 'Should Abner die as a fool dies? Your hands were not bound, your feet were not fettered. As one who falls before the wicked, you have fallen.' And all the people wept again over him. Then all the people came to persuade David to eat bread while it was yet day. But David swore, saying, 'God do so to me and more also if I taste bread or anything else till the sun goes down.' And all the people took notice of it, and it pleased them, and as everything that the king did pleased all the people. So all the people and all Israel understood that day that it had not been the king's will to put to death Abner the son of Ner. And the king said to his servants, 'Do you not know that a prince and a great man has fallen this day in Israel? And I was gentle today, though anointed king. These men, the sons of Zariah, are more severe than I. The Lord repay the evildoer according to his wickedness.'" It's interesting. Joab is the one that murdered Abner, and David makes him mourn for it. Did you catch that? David said to Joab specifically, by name, David said to Joab and to all the people who were with him, probably those who supported his murder of Abner, "Tear your clothes and put on sackcloth and mourn before Abner." Sort of reminds you of the book of Esther, where Haman, wicked Haman, was forced to carry Mordecai around and show him off to be the man whom the king honored. Do you recall that in the book of Esther? And here, David is making Joab rend his clothes and put on sackcloth, which was, by their custom, a way to mourn the death of someone. And they were to do this before Abner. But look, Joab is a still yet and will be a leader in David's, you know, reign. And he's a man to whom respect is given by the people. And he should do this. And David, interestingly enough, actually forces Joab to mourn for his own sin. I thought that was interesting. Then it says here that David followed what is referred to here as the bier. Now, I just assumed this was sort of like a casket, but that is actually not the case. As I researched the customs of this time, I read this. The Hebrew word matah, translated bier, would be better rendered bed. Persons of distinction were sometimes carried to the grave on their own beds. In other words, this was a way to make a man seem more prominent in that they carried on a fixed-up, souped-up bed with emeralds and jewels oftentimes. They would take him to his grave on a bed so that all could mourn for him. So Abner, a man of distinction, according to David's own words, is being carried to his grave on this fancy bed. And not only that, the king publicly follows this bed to the grave. This is quite a funeral procession. I mean, this man is looked at as a great man of Israel. And by the way, David says so here in just a moment. There's an effort to honor Abner in all this. There's also an effort to exonerate David and his kingdom from Abner's murder in all of this as well. David is making it clear that he is not the cause of Abner's murder. Joab is, along with Abishai secondarily, but Joab is the primary actor in that. David and the people weep over Abner. You know, the heart of David really is amazing, isn't it? But David pictures, at times at least, the loving of one's enemies. He wept over Saul. He wept over Jonathan. Obviously, he and Jonathan were close friends, but he and Saul were not. Saul tried to kill him for years. David still weeps over Saul. Now he's mourning for Abner, a man that has been Saul and Ishbosheth's commander. This is the heart of a king, a God's king. And as he did for Saul and Jonathan, so he does for Abner. He writes this lament. Now, if you recall, a lament is not like that immediate mourning when somebody, you're informed of someone's death. It's done a little bit later on when you take time to think about it and you actually pen it and write it down. These are well thought out words by David. It's not nearly as long as what we saw with Saul and Jonathan, but it still says the king lamented for Abner. And here's what he said. Should Abner die as a fool? Dies. The idea here is that by the hand of Joab, Abner died like a criminal. Worse than that, he died as a profane or ungodly person. Notice what he says. Your hands were not bound like a criminal. Your feet were not fettered like a criminal. As one falls before the wicked, you have fallen. You were murdered. You didn't die because you were guilty of a crime and you were in prison and awaiting execution. You were murdered, Abner. Now, this is not so much a commendation of Abner as it is a rebuke of Joab and the way that Joab murdered him. Joab was wrong. Joab was a murderer. David was not party to this whole thing, as he is letting the nation know it. Tom Wilson says, Abner died as if he was ungodly and had cut down Asahel in wickedness rather than in war. And again, he didn't want to kill him to start out with. Asahel overshot the runway, so to speak, and thought that he could beat Abner, but he couldn't. Abner was far too good for him as far as war is concerned. And as a result of David's lament, what does it say there in the last part of verse 14? All the people wept again. all the people wept again over him. Without question, David is uniting Israel. I'm sure that David mourned for Abner. There's a political uniting of the nation that is going on here as well. This is the heart of a king. David is fasting that day. All the people came to David and said, "You need to eat." David said, "God do so to me and more also if I taste bread," listen to this, "or anything else till the sun goes down." This is not just a fast from bread, but from everything. He said, "I will not." What happened? It pleased the people. In fact, it goes on and says, everything that the king did pleased all the people. Folks, our politicians would do well to read this passage and see what a true uniter looks like. David is a uniter. He pleased all the people. He brought the people together. There's way too much division in politics. It sells, but it shouldn't be. Sadly, sometimes you see it in churches. Division's popular. We love it. But a church is supposed to be the testimony of the gospel of Jesus Christ. When people are brought together who normally wouldn't be together, and they are brought together by the gospel of Jesus Christ, and they are held together, that is a testimony. It's like we were talking about a few weeks ago when the Jew and the Gentile came together in first century Israel, and they sat together, worshiping together. That made an impression on those outside. The people fully understood at this point that David is not guilty. Verse 37, all the people and all Israel understood that day that it had not been the king's will to put to death Abner, the son of Ner. With Joab being the commander, most people probably assumed when they first heard the news that David sent him. David, by his actions, made it clear that he was not guilty. He was innocent in this crime. And the people believed it. And of course, he's not being deceptive. He's being honest. He's being true. And certainly God was in this. And David again commends Abner publicly. "Do you not know that a prince and a great man has fallen this day in Israel?" Look, Abner's shown himself more faithful than Joab by this point, even though Abner had opposed David for years. Now, Abner was in the right and David's own commander was in the wrong. Now, David paints himself as a gentleman. Though he had the authority to put Abner to death, he didn't do it. That's the heart of a king. But he also points Joab and Abishai to being guilty. These men, the sons of Zeruiah, are more severe than I. The Lord repaid the evildoer according to his wickedness. And again, under Solomon's reign, David will actually have that finished up. They will actually have that carried out. But folks, our innocence regarding sin does matter. And David made sure that the people knew that he was innocent. People are going to point fingers at you, but you need to make sure that you are innocent regarding true breaking of biblical principles. It does matter. Our reaction to sin matters. Our message matters. Let's be encouraged here. We wonder about David's response. Why he didn't have Joab put to death? We don't know. We're just not given that. There's reason to doubt some things there. But there is coming a king in whom there is no guile. He is the descendant of David, but he's also the root of David. We see the heart of a king in David, though we don't understand all of his actions. There's coming one who you will never question any action that he ever performs. And that's what we ought to see as we end this chapter. That's what we're working towards in the book of 2 Samuel. Always keep Christ in mind as you work through the Old Testament, because this is the looking forward period of Scripture. Stand with me if you will. Drake, will you dismiss us and go ahead and bless the food for the lunch, please, sir?